Broadcasting live from South Texas, this is your Petardcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, and I thank you for joining me for the podcast that turns disgrace into comedy the way that Willy Wonka transforms psychotic terror into chocolate. For our triumphant return slash landmark 10th episode, we'll be joined by Chicago-based author, humorist, and cutie pie Claire Zuhlke, who will discuss matters of a comedic nature and the vast importance of televised singing competitions. We'll also be greasing the wheels of hilarity with the blood of the unemployed, exploring the non-classic screen characters of Patrick Swayze, and so much more that federal law precludes me from discussing it further. There may be better podcasts, there may be funnier podcasts, there may be podcasts with more exciting guest stars, but no podcast is easier to ignore than the Petardcast.
Oh, a petard is a mine used in medieval times, in battles that are now mostly fables. Though it sounds much the same as a derogatory name to refer to the mentally disabled. And all that aside, here it's a metaphor for punchlines that are dry and not at all moist. So here's a podcast filled with mysterious laughs upon which one might be hoist. Oh, Leonard Pierce, you are Ambrose Pierce, so don't disappear into booze and self-regard. Make your obscure jokes, talk with obscure folks, and let us all hope to see you hoist with your own petard.
All right, we're going to start off, as we usually do, with yet another column excerpted from my perennially popular column with the New York Times, Titbits, which ran until 1989, at which point I was fired for gross incompetence, mismanagement, abuse of the staff, and selling the photo archives to the Soviets. Just before I was dismissed from my position at the New York Times, I was asked by my editor to contribute a column for the holidays, sort of Thanksgiving-themed, feel-good column, in which I talked about some of the things that I liked. And here's what I wrote. I drink Haterade. I'm a compulsive master hater. I'm from Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I'm going to start up a hatering company. I'm going to audition for the lead in Der Hater Mouse. My favorite NFL team is the Oakland Haters. My favorite band is Hater Kinney. My favorite grocery store is Hater Joe's, and I like to cook up a big plate of hater tots. I don't love, I don't adore, I don't idolize, worship, or become devoted to. I don't dig, grok, get in tune with, or groove on. I haven't got warm feelings. I don't make warm fuzzies. I ain't down with kissing and hugging and getting to first base. Motherfucker, I don't even like. I hate. People call me stiff haters. My feelings are hatin't. When I march, I call out the hatins. I'm from Hayton, Ohio. I'm a haterosexual. I ain't gonna disappear, but you can still call me Judge Hater. They wouldn't let me try out for the Olympics because there's no such event as speed hating. My favorite movie is Manos, the Hands of Hate. My favorite TV show is Star Hate SH1. I go to work every day on the Hayton Island Ferry. My whole life is subject to prosecution under hate crime statutes. I taught my parrot to say pieces of hate. I go down to the park to play H-A-T-E. When people call hey to me on the street, I wait for them to finish. I'm into hot, han, has, aversione, and odio. I don't abate, aerate, send things air freight, talk about the stuff I ate, take the bait, be a bedmate, up the birth rate, wear a breastplate, call you cheapskate, declare checkmate, auto-chillate, find a cognate, check and collate, go on a blind date, clear out the dead weight, lose the debate, try to filtrate, mononitrate, or help you uncreate. Sometimes I berate, castrate, and up the death rate, but mostly I just hate. I hate the player, I hate the game, I hate the venue, I hate the fans, I hate the officials, I hate the media, I hate the marketing, I hate the licensed merchandise, I hate the allied trades, I hate the business, I hate the rules, I hate the history and the tradition, I hate the season, I hate the awards, I hate the fantasy league. I kind of like the food. Now it's time for a special by request section of Naming of Parts, our featured section where we attempt and fail to learn something about famous Hollywood actors and actresses by examining the names of the characters they've chosen to play over the years. I recently appeared on R.J. White's very fine podcast, Wasted Words, and somehow Patrick Swayze was brought up. And it was suggested by someone that all of the movies he had made are classics. And I found that a little difficult to believe. So I looked up his IMDb page and I'm just going to, you know, I don't want to get too into it because we've got Naming of Parts to do. But he's appeared in movies like Steel Dawn, Keeping Mum, Return of the Rebels, Letters from a Killer, Grandview, USA, and Skate Town, USA, Pigs vs. Freaks, Forever Lulu, Fatherhood, and Youngblood. So if those somehow achieved classic status while I was taking a nap, somebody needs to let me know. But it turned out to be a rewarding exercise because, let me tell you, Patrick Swayze, maker of classic films, tragic victim of pancreatic cancer, and self-professed miracle dude, has played a lot of great character names. His resume may have the most macho dude names in it of anyone I've ever seen. In fact, the only time he played a character with a non-macho name was when he was literally in a dress. Like, you had to actually put him in a dress to get him to play a character with a non-macho name. So let's get started. He played three people who are nicknames, Body, Bandit, and Nomad. Those are all, you know, I mean, Bodhidharma, yeah, that's not a super macho name, even though the guy invented Kung Fu, but he somehow turns it into one in Point Break. And you can't get much more macho than Bandit and Nomad, you know, those are like tough dog names. He's played a number of characters who are only first names, but they're all pretty macho. Dalton, Garth, Chuck, Frank, Tony, Jed, and Pecos Bill. By the way, he has played more people named Lance than any other character name, which ought to tell you something right there. I literally was unable to find any character names of his that are even remotely ethnic, unless you consider Irish people ethnic. But he did play a lot of generic wasps. There's a Travis McPherson, a Richard Pressburger, which is almost non-macho sounding, but the movie it's from is called Jump with an exclamation point, and I don't think you can really play a sissy character in a movie with an exclamation point. Even that would butch up a lot of guys, but Patrick Swayze easily gets away with it. There's a Daryl Curtis, a Truman Gates. Truman, arguably non-macho, but Gates, that makes up for it. A Doug Zimmer, a Roy Kirkendall, a Ben Clifton, a Charles Barker, and a Jack Charles, a Jim Cunningham, a Wayne Saunders, a Derek Sutton, an Eric David Peterson, his only triple-named Super Wasp character, a Kevin Scott, and of course, Alan Quatermain, who he played in a TV movie version of King Solomon's Mines. The name itself is kind of iffy, but, you know, British people even give their superheroes, kind of sissy names. He played a couple of guys with titles, both military guys. He was Private Gary Sturgis in an episode of MASH. And then in a film called Green Dragon, he played Gunnery Sergeant Jim Lance. Now, I dare you to get more macho than that. Not only is he's not a regular sergeant, he's a gunnery sergeant. He's a sergeant of guns. And his name is both Jim and Lance, which is double macho. He played, of course, a ton of tough guy names. He was in the TV miniseries North and South, which was about the Civil War, and he played a guy named Ori Maine, which may sound a little questionable, but back in the Civil War days, Ori was a tough guy name. Of course, in Ghost, he played a guy named Sam Wheat. That's not necessarily a tough guy name, but Patrick Swayze can get away with making a guy who has a grain for a last name sound macho. From there on out, it's pretty much wall-to-wall, you know, guys who could have been the blonde, jutting-chinned guy in a 1950s Jack Kirby comic. Jack McLeod, a Casey Barnes, a Jason Monk, a Jack Cruz, Max Lowe, Johnny Castle, Race Darnell, Slam Webster, Tiger Warsaw, from the film of the same name, and Ace Johnson. I mean, top that, anybody in the world. Even I don't think even John Wayne could beat that stuff. Although, that may be a subject for a future time. The only time he slipped out of, you know, macho waspy characters was, of course, in To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, where he played a drag queen named Vida. And even Vida is not that non-macho because, you know, it makes me think of the baseball player Vida Blue, who was a man. And then once he did a movie, in fact, the very last movie he made called Powder Blue, he played somebody named Velvet Larry, which is, I've never seen the movie, but that doesn't sound very macho. But he was dying of pancreatic cancer at the time, so I think we can let him slide on that one. So thank you, Patrick Swayze, for playing the most macho tough guys ever to toughly macho up a movie, and keep making him in heaven, I guess.
Leonard Pierce, welcome aboard Euroclass Connubial Service's exclusive premier subscriber service. Joining this service means that you have made a commitment to quality. And we at Euroclass have also made a commitment to quality. That's two commitments to quality, and we haven't even sent you a catalog yet. Pretty impressive? Don't be. There's plenty more to come. As the founder of Euroclass Connubial Services, allow me to say a few things about my company. When I received your membership package, I thought to myself, Alexander, Leonard Pierce probably thinks he signed up for another fly-by-nights here today and gone tomorrow, Russian mail order bride racket. Will he be surprised, of course? The facts of the matter is, Euroclass is anything but fly-by-nights. We have been in business since 1991. In fact, we were chartered mere hours after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And while we do feature a wide selection of lovely ladies from the various former satellite nations of the Russian Commonwealth, the Euro in Euroclass means just that. All sorts of accommodating and desirable women from the Ukraine, Belarus, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and even such exotic and sultry paradises as Romania, Albania, Macedonia, whatever the former Yugoslavia is calling itself these days. And yes, we have Hungarians. Wherever sexy women are seeking a better life, Euroclass is there to make them marry you. But I know what you are saying, Leonard Pierce. You are saying, but Alexandra, I have been burned by many a mail-order bride before. There was the Moldovan waitress who locked herself in the toilet and would not come out until I brought her divorce papers. There was the Bulgarian research scientist who refused to leave the back seat of my SUV unless I had myself chemically castrated. There was the South Korean photo retoucher who turned out to be a man, and also stabbed me and took the keys to my safety deposit box. How can I be sure you are on the up and up? Here is how, my money-back guarantee. You are making a commitment to quality, and so are we, and with so much quality commitment, there must be trust. There is my trust that you are a good and decent man who has been unlucky in love. There is your trust that I will not sell you a transsexual, an escaped lunatic, or an enforcer for a drugs gang. If either of us violates that trust, then the prestigious name of Euroclass Connubial Services is tarnished. I would rather give nearly all your money back than to see that happen. You have my word 100% that these are beautiful, sexy girls who want to make marriage with you, not trampy prostitutes who will cosh you in the head with a crowbar and make off with your credit card numbers. This special guarantee, the guarantee of real, not made-up European pretty girls who will almost certainly have sex with you in exchange for a lifetime of financial support, is why we use the phrase connubial services, instead of something with no class like mail-order brides. What kind of mail-order brides are they? I will tell you. They are not desperate, no more than you are. They are gorgeous ladies from any number of Slavic countries, many of whom own their own lingerie. Our ladies run the gamut from tall to short, from 18 to 35, from skinny to sexy, and from amateur pornographic actress to amateur pornographic actress slash former head of the oceanography department at the University of Tirana. Many are named Olga, but nothing approaching a majority. They are thoroughly vetted for social diseases, the possession of undisclosed children, knowledge of the English language, and familiarity with United States divorce and family law. We are proud of what we do, not shady. And part of not shady means that we are not running hookers out of the former Eastern Bloc. We are arranging transport and matrimonial facilitation services to lonely men and eager women who just happen to need a little help, not because they are criminals or escaped sociopaths or pawns in some sort of insurance fraud. Allegations are called allegations because no one has proven them, Leonard Pierce. These are good Christian ladies, or if you prefer, not. And also, they like what you like, if you know what I mean, unless what you like is girls who refuse to speak with you and go to live with your neighbors until a policeman comes, because they sure don't like that. To recap, we have many commitments to quality. You are Euroclass, because Euro equals Pian, and Class equals Classy with a K. With a commitment to quality, or in this case, quality with a K. You cannot long survive in this business without a sense of humor. Beautiful ladies, expensive but well worth it, probably will not deny you sex. Not a felony. Can anyone else make you that promise? The promise of not a felony? I think not anyone. Check the box for our free catalog today, Leonard Pierce. Your sexy connubial future is waiting. Waiting in the Celebinsk Airport cocktail lounge right now, and neither one of you is getting any younger. All right, welcome back to the Petardcast. We are joined for this exciting 10th episode by my good friend, Claire Zulke. How are you, Claire?
I'm great, Leonard.
It's good to have you here. We don't often have women on the show because it smells so bad.
Yeah, I mean, because women smell so bad or the show smells so bad?
Well, the show smells, but, you know, the women don't help it.
Yeah.
They clash.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our theoretical listeners who you are and what you do?
I'm a writer in Chicago. I have a day job for a medical journal that is very pleasant and nice, and I am behind the scenes on some stuff that's important that I don't understand. And then in my downtime, or my uptown time, whatever you want to call it, I write a blog called Zulke.com, and I write about TV and pop culture for sites like the AV Club and the LA Times. And I published a book in 2009 that I'm hoping to follow up. And a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
What is the name of that book, Claire?
It's called An Off Year. It was published by Dutton.
It's a very good book. Everybody go buy it at once.
It's an adult book, but you don't have to be a young adult to enjoy it. You can be any age, adult or young, whatever.
Indeed.
Does the medical journal that you work for, do they publish like a lot of really disgusting stuff?
No, not really. It's pretty much of a letdown in terms of anything disgusting or practical. It's the field of nutrition, and a friend of mine looked at it one time because I think she thought she was going to learn something useful, like, you know, eat chickpeas and live 100 years. And it's stuff like levels of hemoglobin in 10 to 12-year-olds in rural Alabama, studied from 1990 to 1994. So, and nothing disgusting. The only, like, the most disgusting thing I ever read was, like, the effects of using pureed cannellini beans as opposed to oil and making brownies. And that was about it.
Blah.
Yeah.
That is pretty disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
How has Chicago been? How have you been? Have you been taking care of it for me?
I have. I was just talking to my husband, Steve, about how this winter has been feeling less oppressive than most, like the last couple. I'm not sure why. I don't feel the sort of the crush of depression that I have the last couple of winters. I'm trying, I don't know what it is, I'm trying not to think about it too much.
Global warming.
Yeah, it's global warming, I think. It
takes the edge off.
It's true. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It feels like it's been pretty good. We have the mayoral election coming up, which, you know, it's going to be Rahm Emanuel, and they're going to go through the motions of having an election.
as they've been doing for the last 50 to 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because when they had him off the ballot temporarily, I was like, we know that he's going to be on the ballot, and we know he's going to win. Like, it's not even a question. Like, why are they?
Like, some of my friends who are not from Chicago are like, "Oh, look at that! Rahm Emanuel's not—he's been disqualified. He's not going to be able to be mayor." And I'm like, "Yeah, uh-huh."
Sure. I'm like, "He's mayor already, basically. Yeah. Like, they just haven't changed the name on the airport sign yet." Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been good. Today was a little bit warm. I went for a run this morning, which was very nice. And I've been holding shit together pretty well.
Good job.
Thanks.
How's married life treating you?
It's going fine. My husband was out of the house all day yesterday, which, was really awful and lonely. So I had a friend over for brunch, and we drank a bottle of champagne, and we ate a lot. We watched some crappy TV, and then I watched more crappy TV. And I ate some more, and like I said, I mean, it sounds awful, and it was. So, but yeah, it's been good. Steve and I do our own thing a lot. Like, he's been working in the office most of the day today, and I do my thing. So it's kind of like the best of all worlds of, like, not having someone in your face, but then when you want someone in your face, then you can usually, you know, round them up.
Would you say that you are winning the marriage?
I would say so.
Is it close, or are you just walking away with it?
It's pretty close. Like, today we had a little, I wouldn't say argument, but I like to get rid of things. I love throwing things away. And I decided today is the day to go to Salvation Army. And I started packing up the car, and Steve was working. And I was mad at him for not helping me without saying. He could just tell. And then he offered to help me later to do it. So I kind of won in that he will help me, but he sort of won by making me not mad anymore. So that's a toss up, but yeah, it's pretty close.
All right. Fair enough.
I mean, that's a look into the, you know, turmoil of marriage. This is the kind of stuff that I'm going to write my marriage advice book about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What would your advice be for women who want to, like, physically dominate their husbands, like, fight them and win?
Let's see. Kick them in the penis and, I guess have folding chairs that you can raise above your head, to bring down on their head when they're turned around. If your chair is too heavy, you won't be able to pick it up, and then you'll be defenseless unless you're pretty good with a knife. But
you don't want to kill them though. You just want to, like, pound them.
Yeah, and if they bleed, someone's going to clean that up, and who's going to keep the knives sharp too, you know, ladies?
Right.
So that's what I would say. But Steve's a bigger guy than me, and I sort of like it because it makes me feel small. I used to make him pick me up a lot. I haven't made him do that lately. I should get back to that. But yeah, he's sort of a big guy.
Well, next time he picks you up,
mm-hmm.
Box his ears.
Well,
like, he won't be expecting that.
Today I picked a pretty good piece of lint out of his belly button, which is kind of like emotionally, I'd say the same, you know, has the same effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, speaking of crappy TV, very frequently on this show, we do a segment called Jack Hughes, mm-hmm. in which I ask people to defend or justify some horrible historical atrocity. But instead of a historical atrocity, I think we should talk about American Idol. Many people find a cultural atrocity, and I just don't understand why. I think it's great. So you do the American Idol beat for the AV Club.
Yes,
I do. You do a fine job of it.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on this season so far?
Well, we talked about it a tiny bit ahead of time. I like that everyone's kind of surprised that this is not so horrible so far. I think everyone thought that without Simon, the show was going to be irrelevant and unwatchable, and it's actually been much more pleasant. The judges are not so, you know, jaded that they are just phoning it in. And then I actually find Steven Tyler and Jennifer Lopez quite likable. And without Simon to turn him into a bigger idiot, Randy has been too bad. I think with Steven and Jennifer being so famous, I think they have to put up with a lot less crap. Like they're going to give, you know, they're going to waste their time a lot less because that's not their job. Like Simon Cowell was sort of put there to listen to bad singing and make bad comments about it. But they're not going to waste Steven Tyler's time with, you know, too much crap. I mean, a little bit. So I like that the talent seems to be a little bit better. I like the lack of negativity. I think we all thought it would the show couldn't sustain itself without it. And I'm actually legitimately curious to see how this will, you know, how Hollywood Week will go, how the performances will go with this new setup. So I'm actually intrigued, and I like defending it because I think, you know, a lot of people have written it off already. And I think the kind of the consensus is amongst the critics is this cautious optimism, what do you know sort of thing. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think it's pretty good so far. I'm largely in concurrence with you. I've been pleased with Jennifer Lopez and Steven Tyler so far. You know, as you know, I really only get into it once Hollywood Week starts. You know, I tend to kind of dip in and out of the selection rounds, you know. Once everybody's in place, that's when I really get into it, because that's when, you know, people's personalities and particular skill sets come out. So that's going to be my test, is like the next week or two. But so far, I would say it's very successful. It's it had the potential to be a complete disaster, and I think it's not been that at all. I think it's been one of the more refreshing seasons, maybe the best in a few years.
Well, last season was such a drag.
It was like, not like awful, but just kind of like, it was tedious to watch.
It was perfunctory. It felt like the whole thing, it was tedious. And the personalities were just you know, nothing you could get into. And it's not like someone has to be terribly controversial or flashy. I mean, Adam Lambert and Chris Allen were two of my favorites just because they seem like nice guys. Like, and I mean, they were talented too, and I liked legitimately seeing what they would do every week. But the thing that they seem like they're pushing the sob stories a little bit harder this season, which I'm not feeling. But I feel like that falls away once the actual singing starts. So anyway, sorry, I think I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's that's fine. I was going to ask you. I mean, America has completely embraced the reality show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been the standard, you know, entertainment delivery vector for, you know, well over a decade. You know, well, several decades almost since the mid-90s. And, you know, of course, some of them are terrible and some of them are better than others. But American Idol seems to inspire a particular kind of, like, irrational hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think that is? I've never quite understood that, because it doesn't seem to me to be any more obnoxious than any other TV, you know, reality show.
I don't know. I mean, I guess people, I'm not a music purist in that I feel like there has to be a certain level of cred for music to be accepted, like legitimate. And I think going through a reality TV show and having the, I mean, because the show is cheesy, there's no getting around it. And I think some people can't, just can't accept that as any sort of legitimate talent could possibly go through a television show, as if, you know, there are not a million other completely other idiotic ways to try and get famous or try and get a music contract. But again, that's just me, that I don't feel like to be a success in music, you have to slog it for, you know, you don't have to be Anvil or something like that, where I don't know. I mean, I think people just don't accept the cheesiness or can't get around it. And
yeah, I think like I've heard so many people say, oh, well, you know, the music sucks and they're just going to be mainstream performers. Well, yeah, of course they are. That's what the competition is about. You know, it's not to find America's next best, you know, songwriter.
Yeah.
It's a singing competition on TV. You know, it's like you don't have to be a big track and field fan to watch the track and field events at the Olympics and go, oh, this is exciting and interesting, you know?
Yeah, and I actually
just have to accept the definition of the competition and, you know, accept it for what it is. The fact that I don't give a shit about what any of the performers have done after their American Idol careers doesn't have anything to do with my enjoyment of the show.
Yeah. I mean, I would even go so far as to say the people who have made really good careers out of Idol, by and large, are pretty unobjectionable. Like, I like Kelly Clarkson. I think she's talented, and she seems like a cool person. And, you know, Carrie Underwood does, you know, there's some people that you're like, oh, I can't believe they got famous and I have to look at their stupid faces. If it wasn't for that TV show, I wouldn't have to deal with it. It's not like that, like, where you're obligated to see, like, Sanjaya on TV all the time now, you know? So I think it actually, in some ways, is pretty fair in terms of who succeeds and who doesn't. You know, and I think part of it has to do with Ryan Seacrest, honestly, because he's just, I mean, you know, he's the 21st century Dick Clark. Sorry, Dick Clark. He's
Dick
so
Clark
cheap.
Was the 19th century Dick Clark.
Yeah, I know. And it's sad that he's still alive. And I was going to say rest in peace. I think Ryan Seacrest honestly is part of it. I think he's so, you know, blonde and white teeth, and not to really go there, but I think there's like, even if he's not gay, he's still a little bit gay, you know, and the show is therefore a little bit gay, and so that's why, you know, I love that you love the show, because you know, you are not one of the girls in that YouTube video who screamed and cried and threw a fit when David Aguilera, Aguilera lost. But that just goes to show that you can enjoy the show. Who else? There's a lot of like famous people, like Courtney Love, I think, likes American Idol. Like, so it's just,
yeah, I don't know if you've been following it, but Paul F. Tompkins has started doing an American Idol recap this year.
Oh, really?
And I'm not going to say he's stealing our thunder.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying he's making a lot of very similar jokes that someone like you or me might recognize.
Wow.
Having watched the show for a long time. Not that it's not good. I highly recommend it. But I'm just saying some people have been down that road before.
I did not know that. I always struggle with how much I should read other recaps of shows, because I feel like I should I see what they're doing and use that to improve, either to strive to be what they, to do what they do or to not, or will it kind of mess with me? And will I, you know, accidentally plagiarize, or will I doubt myself, or I don't know what. So, I have been trying a little bit more like the Gawker recaps. I know Richard does a good job, with what he does over there. Although I try and read the recaps of shows that I don't watch, so I can kind of get the flavor of what they do without, you know, reading what I about, because basically I don't want to read the same recap of the same episode five times, because
yeah,
if
there are recappers that I like, I will read them. Like, I tend to read Alan Sepinwall's stuff a lot, but when I do recaps, I don't read anybody else's until I've already written mine.
Yeah, because then
I don't, you know, then I know it hasn't influenced me. So
yeah.
All right. Well, are you ready to have a dialogue, Claire?
Oh yeah, go
all
for
right,
it.
Let's do it.
Who was it?
I'm sure I have no idea, Mary.
Oh, yes, you do. Even a man who is pure at heart and says his prayers by night, you know.
I don't know.
God damn it, you do know. It was one of those old Universal horror pictures.
Lower your voice, will you? You're making a scene.
I'm making a scene. You're sitting there like you were a real man sipping on a San Pellegrino. It makes me sick.
I just wish you'd watch your language, dear.
It wasn't so long ago you didn't watch your own, because you didn't even have one. You take a few classes at the new school, and all of a sudden you're Henry goddamn Higgins. Well, don't you forget, mister, that it wasn't so long ago that you were all alone, bad, friend good. So don't come off all superior to me.
I don't think anything of the kind.
You don't think. That's the problem.
Why don't you have another drink, dear? Perhaps it will lower your inhibitions.
Oh, don't try and be clever, little man. The cleverest bits of you got thrown away off your daddy's workbench.
Now we're engaging in personalities. I suppose I should be grateful at least you've got one.
Ha ha ha! My husband, Adam, everyone. He was first in his class. Can you imagine it? Once he was on the lights of Broadway. Now he's lucky if he can get arrested for walking out naked to get the paper on Mockingbird Lane.
I'm sure no one is interested in your sad little stories, darling.
You're a living joke, Adam. Not even a funny one.
And I suppose you're the punchline.
Is that a threat? Are you threatening me? I swear to God, Adam, I'll beat you like a disobedient hound if I wasn't afraid of bruising you.
Yes, appearances are so important. Your lovely hairdo, for example.
Well, it was good enough when you married me. Maybe you thought you'd never do any better. You were right about that.
I'm sure you had prospects aplenty, and you gave them all up for me. I'm flattered.
I had prospects. A doctor.
Pretorius? You're boasting about that? The man was a lunatic. You might as well say he once had a crush on the village idiot.
You are a monster. Not even a frightening one. A misshapen, hideous one. You're like some sort of huge cockroach, you pathetic little vermin.
Oh, God.
There's no use calling on him. If he cared about you, you'd still be at the end of a rope.
I feel I rather am.
Oh, hilarious. You're such a stitch. With clever banter like that, it's no wonder all the little girls love you so much. Professor? So wise, so learned.
Happy anniversary to you too, dear. Each year a beautiful repeat of the one before. We belong dead.
Honestly, you've been trotting out that same tired line for 75 years. You're boring everyone, Adam. Stop boring everyone.
Waiter, another drink, please, I beg of you.
Begging will get you nowhere. Remember that violin player who took you for your life savings like there was so much of it?
Like I remember your first hiss, Mary, my love. What happened to those carefree days?
You did, Adam. You did.
This is a scene entitled Sheriff Art Responds to an Emergency Call from Glenn Danzig. All right, so I'm reading over the... I know, Glenn. No, I know. I know you need to get out of here. None of us want to be here either. I'm going to read back what you got me in the report and make sure I got everything straight here. All right, so you say the wall started closing it around you. Now, that's your business, Glenn. That's the way you wanted the house built, and I'm not going to call into question your choice of contractors, but you did want the house to be that way, so I told you when you moved here that that was going to lead to trouble. They're twins of evil. They shook him by the collarbone and snapped his ribcage. All right. Now, again, I'm not trying to play I told you so, Glenn. But you wanted those twins. It says twins of evil right in their name. It doesn't say twins of happiness. It doesn't say twins of having a fulfilling life. It doesn't say twins of taking care of you in your dotage. It says my twins of evil. That's how you introduced them to me at the barbecue. You said, these are my twins of evil. And what did I say? That's right, I said that twins of evil are just going to get you two times the evil. I know you said that's the point. But I don't know how you're going to come complaining when they shake people by their collarbone and snap their rib cages. So now we end up with all these, what, broken bodies in your what? In your death rock dance hall. Right. No. Well, shit, Glenn, I stopped listening to music in 1973. If the kids today want to go to a death rock dance hall, I'm not one to judge them. I remember when all the hippity hop started down. No, I don't like it either. And what now? Then you asked one of them to please be your partner. That sounds a little needy to me, Glenn. I mean, you're a local celebrity. All right, eyeballs popped, accelerated blood beat, veins are shaking, and all hell broke loose. All right, well, it's Twins of Evil and the Death Rock Dance Hall. I just don't know what you were expecting, Glenn. No, well, why didn't you call me to supervise? You know, have some, you know, invite some of the school teachers down to chaperone the thing. All right, so, say what? Who but you could write the book? I don't even know what the Book of Cruel is, Glenn. So I'm not even going to speculate as to who but you could have written it. Certainly nobody I know. All right, so then what? All right, you sent a murdergram to all your monster kids. All right. Why didn't you just text them, Glenn? No. All right, well, no, that's fine. You do what, you do what you want. Maybe you were getting bored with all the broken bodies in the Death Rock Dance Hall, you know, and you want to go out and send a murdergram? I mean, it helps the local economy, I guess. And so what's your complaint? It came back to you, and what? And it's signed in their parents' blood. Well, it's a murdergram, Glenn. It's a murdergram, and you sent it to Monster Kids. I mean, again, what did you think? They were going to send it back with a bouquet of posies or, you know, coupons for an oil change or something? It's a murdergram. Why didn't, if you wanted a good response, why didn't you send a telegram? That should be about it for this 10th episode of the Petardcast, through which we all suffered together for the common good. Thanks to delightful Ms. Claire Zulke for preserving what remains of her dignity throughout the course of this show. Her power-showered website is zulke.com, and her book, An Off Year, can be found on Amazon, ABE Books, and bookstores near you. Please join me next week when we'll have another brand new special guest, some confused and angry stabs at comedy, and a bunch of pratfalls that you won't be able to see because it's radio. As always, prospective guests may email me at guests@ludiclive.com, and your thoughtful hate mail is always welcome at info@ludiclive.com. The Petardcast may be had on ludiclive.com 24 hours a day, or as a free download at the iTunes Music Store. This episode is dedicated to Mr. Daniel Carms and the Eastern Bloc Robot Cowboy. Thanks again for listening to our little show. I'm your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, applying makeup and short pants to the well-preserved corpse of internet audio comedy.